'Tis the season to clear out clutter. Advice from expert organizers. Is there a closet door in your home that you are afraid to open? Have you resolved that this is the year you are finally going to go through the attic or basement and get rid of all that stuff you never use, or maybe those old clothes that haven't fit in years? What's stopping you? It's hard to put your finger on why this is so hard, but you are not alone. I'm Jennifer Rooks. It's January, the month for resolutions. It's going to be really cold tomorrow. So let's talk about decluttering, including cleaning up that email inbox and those digital photos. We have two experts on the show to help you declutter and de-stress as well. Main Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by listeners and by Maine General Health, a comprehensive system for all your health care needs. Learn more at MaineGeneral.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The start of a new year is as good a time as any to take on the task of tidying up your home and getting rid of the clutter in your life. Today, we're going to talk with organizing experts about how to live with less, and that includes clearing out digital clutter as well. Joining me, Melissa Kaiser. She is a professional organizer and a certified KonMari consultant, and Sean Fowles. He's a founder and editor of Living Large with Less. He lives in the keeper's cottage of an historic lighthouse in Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you been trying to declutter? Has this been a project of the pandemic for you? Or have you been putting it off? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. And we are fully aware that this is hard and we do not judge. Both Melissa and Sean seem like perfectly lovely, nice people. So go ahead and call in and share your challenges with decluttering, getting rid of things that maybe you know have no place, taking up space in your home, but you just can't get rid of. But first, I want to ask you all sort of the big question. And Sean, I'll start with you. Why do you believe it's important to sort of get rid of the flotsam and jetsam in your house?
Right. Well, my wife and I have always strived to live simply. But for us, it was really an epiphany that I had. We have, both my wife and I have publishing backgrounds. We had a large library of a couple thousand books. And yet our goal was to really travel. And we could only do that by living more lightly. And so we literally started to pare down our library. That was kind of the starting point for us. And being a book lover, that was pretty hard to begin with. But we really had this idea in mind, and we actually adopted the mantra, minimize to mobilize. And that was kind of the prism that we began to see our journey through. And so as I gradually gave away the bulk of my library, my local library probably could have dedicated a wing to us, as many books as we gave away. I tried to be really intentional about ones that I gave to my friends and family members. And I kept my very favorite ones, I must say that. But that really freed us up to start to travel and move to places that we had always dreamed of living, since I can work from anywhere. And so that was really the starting point for us. And really, just less stuff meant more life for us as a couple. And so that was really the paradigm that we began with.
Less stuff meant more life. And it's so interesting to me, Sean, that your journey began with getting rid of books, because I think that is really the pinnacle of emotional and sentimental objects for so many people. So many people are so attached to their books, yet books are heavy, and right. Books attract dust, and books, you know, let's be honest. Did you say you had 2,000 books? books. Are you really going to read 2,000 right. books over again?
Exactly. And that really was the thought that occurred to me, was I hadn't read about half of them, and I knew I wasn't likely to reread the half that I had read. I had signed first editions by New York Times bestselling authors because, you know, the publishers would send me complimentary copies when I would review them and so forth. I was a book editor at a magazine. And so we had a lot of books to wade through. But again, the idea of keeping my favorites really helped with that process. I knew I wasn't having to get rid of all of them. And so I ultimately got it down to our favorite 50 or so, which is what we've got today.
Melissa, you're a professional organizer, which I presume means you go into people's homes and you help them with this process, and you do so because it's hard for them to do it by themselves. How much of your job is actually the how-to, A, B, C, D, and how much of it is the emotional support to do this?
There's a large portion of the emotional support, and I often... off end of a session, my clients will be like, this was more like therapy than organizing, because a lot of it comes down to, in order to be really organized, you have to get rid of a lot of the clutter, because otherwise you're just putting stuff that you don't need in boxes, and that doesn't really solve any problems. So you have to really get to the stuff that's under the stuff, you know, why you have all these piles, why you have so much stuff. And that's really what I help people do, to really identify, you know, what's important for them. And then once we know what items we want to keep, then we can figure out good systems. Those are the bins, the baskets, the cute labels, those types of things.
Why do you think, Melissa, why do you think it's so hard?
Because I think we have such emotional connection to our stuff. Like Sean was just saying, you know, with his books, he really loved his books, but he finally was able to make, you know, that choice to let those go. But I think for a lot of people at the beginning, like, our identity is often so wrapped up in our things. And so, like, with books, for example, I encounter a lot of my very educated clients, you know, they don't want to let go of books because then they're fearful that somehow if they let go of books, they're no longer, you know, an educated person. If they let go of all their textbooks, how are they going to prove that they went to college or things like that? And so to make those decisions, to let those items go, you have to do a lot of, you know, emotional work to be like, no, you know I'm an educated person. I don't have to have these books to prove it. Or, you know, I don't need these items to prove something to either myself or to other people. But there's a lot of processing you have to kind of go through.
Give us the pitch for why, Melissa. Sean talked about freedom. Do you find that your clients feel this sense of freedom when they're done?
Absolutely. And that's what I encountered for myself. And that's why I got into this business, was because I saw how transformational, you know, my own journey was. And I approached it originally from a mental health capacity, because I'm an anxious person. I'm a highly sensitive person. I'm very easily overstimulated. And I found that in my house, I felt like the walls were closing in all the time. And these piles, like trying to find something, to have to go through stuff to find what I needed, was just so frustrating. And I've always been a pretty organized person. Like, I was the one that, you know, alphabetized my home library and color coded my planner in school and things like that. But I had a lot of stuff. Yes, it was organized, but there was still just so much stuff. And I felt like anytime, you know, somebody wanted to come over, I had to like rush to clean the house, because it was hard to clean because there was stuff everywhere. And I would have to frantically clean everything up. And I couldn't enjoy the visit because I was so worried about what my friends were thinking about my house with my piles and my clutter. And so I started to let things go. And I realized that really helped my mental health. I was less stressed. I also, once I could really identify what was important to me, I shopped less, which benefited many other areas of my life, less consumerism. And on a day-to-day basis, it just makes life easier. And that's, I think, what a lot of my clients find is, you know, they can get out of the house easier because they know where their keys are. They can get ready for work without being stressed because they were able to easily get dressed because they knew where their clothes were, or they don't have as many arguments with their spouses about the piles everywhere, because it's like scientifically proven that, you know, clutter causes stress, and that it's a huge source of arguments amongst couples, the mess around the house.
Does clutter cause stress, Melissa, for everybody, Or are there some people, I mean, we've all known people. Boy, I've worked my entire career in either television or radio. And let me tell you, I have had colleagues, some of the most creative, fun, and funny people throughout my career, whose cubicles or desks are almost a work of art in their messiness. Are there people for whom a mess works?
I think it does. And I think even on how organized a space is, it's a very personal thing. Like if someone were to walk into my house, they'd probably be like, oh, she's actually not that organized. To me, it's organized enough. And some people, like, hyper-organized is too constricting versus like everything thrown everywhere and there being no system, then that wouldn't work for them. But then for some people that does work. So I think it is a very personal thing. And I think there are certain, especially I've heard creatives in particular, like some form of chaos or some kind of clutter. So it's definitely not something that like everybody has to do. If you feel like your house is not overwhelming, and then that's great. Like I'm not out here to make everyone be organized. It's to just, if you feel like you're not comfortable and you're overwhelmed at home, then let's change that.
All right. So we're going to start with some basic tips. I'm going to go back to you, Sean. If you're listening today and you're thinking, okay, it's going to be really cold tomorrow, I'm going to put on some sweats and I'm going to get started with a closet or a bookshelf. What do you advise? How do you get started?
Yeah. So the number one thing that I know helped my wife and I is we started with the end in mind. And again, this is not going to be everybody's point of reference, but with us, we did have this goal of paring our possessions down to where we could become more mobile. And what really helped us was identifying our favorite things. Early on in our journey, I came across a website online that talked about the 100 thing challenge. And I was intrigued by this idea of people that pared their things down and literally took pictures of them and counted them. Like people were traveling the world, living out of a backpack with 55 things and that kind of thing. Not that I wanted to do that personally, but it intrigued me by like motivating me to take an inventory. And so I started to list what we had, what I could get rid of. And so this idea of a favorite things list or a 100 thing challenge or another website that I came across online talked about what if your house was on fire, what would you grab? So that started to get the wheels turning, like, okay, I mean, not that that's all you want to live with, but it does help you go through the process of these are like my really important things. Like I want these heirlooms or, you know, we need to organize our wills and marriage certificates and birth certificates and get those all in one place so that we could grab them. And so any kind of little reference point that you can start to incorporate, I feel like, starts to make that entire process a lot easier because now you have a track to run on. And I will say that I literally started going through every drawer, every closet, every room in our home and touched everything that we owned over a period of time. And unless you're willing to do that, you're not going to really be able to experience the full benefit. And not everybody needs to do that. I will say, just like Melissa was saying, you may like your garage the way it is and you don't feel like it needs decluttering, or you may feel like your attic is organized or whatever. But I know for us, because we were trying to become more mobile, we really needed to get pretty radical about addressing everything that we owned. And to this day, a decade later, after starting this journey, I still have an inventory that I keep up. And when we shop and get a new possession, I update the list just so I know what I have. And my insurance agent loves it.
So. Sean, when you were doing this, going through the drawers and going through the cabinets, was it fun for you or was it stressful for you?
It was. No, it was very liberating because, you know, again, we'd always tried to live simply. In fact, anyone walking into our house before we sort of took it up a notch would have thought we were the most organized people they knew. I mean, you know, it's kind of like what Melissa said. I was organized, but I still had too much stuff. I mean, if you walked into my office, I had reams and reams of paper. You know, being in publishing, you end up with a lot of paper. You know, I edited books for a living. And so I had a lot of paper, but it was very organized. But I started to pare that down. I shredded what needed to be shredded. I scanned what needed to be scanned. You know, I archived what needed to be archived. And so it really was very helpful to realize what all you have. You know, as Melissa said, one of our favorite things is to walk into a store today and look around and think of all the things that we don't need. And consumerism is a huge deal in our society. And I think a lot of times we go shopping. I know for us, we would go shopping and buy things that we didn't realize we already had. So by virtue of literally going through and physically touching everything we owned and creating this inventory, it helped us to realize, wait a second, I don't need a second or a third of whatever it is that we're talking about. And so it just really was very helpful to really get a grasp on what we already owned, maybe some things that we could get rid of that would benefit someone else, especially in our sharing economy that's become popular nowadays. You know, if you're not using something, why not enable someone else to benefit from it? So,
Melissa, I'll turn to you. How would you recommend somebody start if they are going to take advantage of the cold day tomorrow to maybe tackle one thing?
Yeah. So like you had used the example of, you know, tackle your closet. I think that is a great area to start, because the first thing we do when we get dressed in the morning, we put on clothes. And so if we are stressed in that situation, like energetically, we're going to carry that along for the rest of the day. So if we can get dressed with ease, I think that's a great place to start. And so in order to declutter your closet, like Sean said, you know, have your end goal in mind. And so when I work with my KonMari clients, we actually start the session by visualizing our ideal life. And that's not necessarily what your closet looks like. It can include that, but you know, what does it feel like to get dressed in the morning? What does it feel like to wear clothes that you are comfortable in, or that you feel attractive in, or whatever, however you want to feel when you're in your clothes? And then think about how you spend your time. You know, are you going to a lot of cocktail parties? Is that important to you? Is it a higher priority for you to be able to roll around on the floor with your kids, or, you know, spend all your days hiking, thinking about how you want to live your life? And then the next thing, once you have that clear vision, take all of your clothes, group it all together, make a giant pile. And this is something that's really important in the Marie Kondo's process, is seeing all of your items together. So that means pull all the stuff out of the closet, pull all the stuff out of the drawers, go get the pile of sweatshirts that's in the back seat of the car, you know, take the stuff out of the coat closet, get it all in one area, because stuff's often scattered all over our house. But when we get all of the similar items in the same category together, it's really kind of shocking and eye-opening at how much stuff we actually have. So once you have all your things together, you know, pile them on the floor, or if you have a spare room or on your bed, if that space-wise isn't feasible for you, then, you know, pick one category, pull all your pants together, because then that way you can be like, oh, I actually have 8 pairs of black leggings. How many do I actually need? And you can kind of compare, you know, side by side. And then like Sean said, you have to touch every single item. So pull it out, hold it up. You know, how do you feel about that? You know, I use the language, you know, does it spark joy? If that doesn't resonate with you, you know, when was the last time I wore this? Does this piece of clothing fit in with that ideal lifestyle that I'm imagining? You know, if you have, you know, a lot of, you know, holy sweatpants, but your envision is being, you know, a boss babe at a corporate job, that doesn't really fit in with that lifestyle. So letting those things go can help you, you know, achieve those goals and not just fall back into that, like, oh, well, I have these, I guess I'll just slum around the house. But touch every item and then make a choice about, does this add something to my life?
We are talking about getting organized, decluttering, just clearing out the things that we do not need in our homes. If you have a question, call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from F.L. Putnam. committed to providing responsible fiduciary investment and wealth management for Maine families and institutions. flputnam.com.
More kids are in hospitals with COVID.
From the beginning of the pandemic, children under 5 have always been the highest proportion of children hospitalized.
On the next Science Friday, two pediatric disease specialists answer your questions about kids with COVID. When should you become concerned? All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Science Friday this afternoon at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
This week on Maine's Political Pulse, the legislature is back and digging into issues ranging from vaccine mandates to amending the state constitution to prohibit sex discrimination. Also, members of Congress dig into voting rights and the scarcity of COVID tests. Join me, Steve Missler, and Kevin Miller for Maine's Political Pulse, airing Friday evenings at 5:35. Subscribe on your podcast app and to the weekly newsletter at mainepublic.org/pulse.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We are talking today about decluttering, paring down your possessions, reducing digital clutter, and adopting a less is more mindset. With me today, Sean Fowlds. He's the founder and editor of Living Large with Less, and Melissa Kaiser, a professional organizer and declutter coach. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Ellery calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for the timely show. It's excellent, excellent. Thank you very much. When I work with folks who have clutter, I spend sometimes hours and days getting to know them. And one of the things I like to put in a plug for is the advantage of having clutter. My Christmas cards are scattered all over the house. But my big question is, when I'm working with someone and they have an emotional attachment, oh, this piece of silverware was with my great-grandma. I can't pass it on, and there's no relatives to pass it on. There's many books written on the subject, but are there some tried-and-true methods to sort of modify or adjust the connection for the emotional attachment we have to some of our antiquities, the family that it gets handed down? And what do we do with those when they become a clutter item?
Melissa, you're nodding. I'm sure you see this a lot, things that have come down through the generations.
And it's a hard one because there is so much emotional attachment, but there's also almost a feeling of responsibility and then a feeling of guilt, like, oh, I don't want this item from grandma. Does that make me a bad person? You know, there's a lot to go through that. And what I usually advise my clients to do is, first of all, you know, go back to that vision. Does this particular item fit in with how you want to live your life? And if it doesn't, then it's okay to let things go. You're not dishonoring, you know, your grandmother to let it go. You know, your grandma probably would rather you be happy than to hold on to a bunch of stuff and feeling resentful. And then, you know, kind of thinking about what does it actually mean to you? Is it because it was your grandmother's, or is it because you know, it's worth something, or is it because you have these memories of sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner and eating with the china or the silverware? And then thinking about, do I have to have this item to recall that memory? And the likely chance is probably not. You probably have other things that maybe you love that remind you of your grandmother, or you have those memories, those feelings. That physical item isn't what is giving you the feeling. It's the memories of using that. And then in terms of letting things go, of course, you know, if there's other family members, check, you know, if, you know, did you want grandma's china or things like that before just tossing it. But the true fact is right now, there's not a lot of market out there for a lot of these antique things. But there are, of course, some items that do have value. So you can always check with an antiques advisor or an auction house to see if there's, you know, a resale value. Otherwise, sometimes, you know, just letting it go with gratitude that you had these moments with your grandma saying thank you and then passing it along to somebody who will love that item.
Allery, if thanks I could so add, much. Yeah, go ahead, Sean.
I just wanted to add something real quick. A couple of things that I would recommend is maybe if you're talking about a collection of silverware or medals or whatever it might be, is keep one representative sample from that. Like keep, you know, a silver spoon or whatever it is that might just be sort of a memory keeper. You don't have to keep the whole collection, but just keep a representative sample of it. And the other thing is take a picture of whatever it is you're talking about, and then you'll have that reminder of the memory without the object itself.
Ellery, thanks for your call. And I think you represent a lot of people there. A simple email from Joanne. I'm going to send this to you, Sean. How do you dispose of textbooks? Any recycling tips, or am I left with tossing them in the trash? I'm drowning in boxes.
Yeah, that's a good one. I personally just disposed of mine. This was years ago before like recycling became a thing. So I probably should have recycled them, but a lot of times that's going to be your only option. I don't know if there's really much of a secondhand market. I guess depending on how far back your educational experience goes, there might be some sort of residual value. But I know for me, it was so long ago, I ended up tossing mine. You know, recycling would definitely be a way to go. I'm not sure if a Salvation Army or someplace like that would even be willing to take textbooks. I don't think they usually do. So that's not necessarily an alternative. So it's a bit of a quandary when it comes to textbooks.
Melissa. I can add in on there. So if you have paper recycling in your town or your city, they may take them, but you have to take the covers off. And that includes the spine. Regardless of where you're at, they can't recycle the covers. So if you want to go through and tear off all the covers and the spines, and then if you have paper recycling, that is an option. But also think about, you know, is that worth the amount of time for you? Sometimes we have to think about things like that. As I always use metaphors of food, you know, like you have an avocado, it's in the fridge, that's bad. You just have to accept that it went bad and let it go. So sometimes that's what we have to do, even if it does feel a little bit wasteful.
I have an email here from Andy. Can you comment on how being able to declutter can be a reflection of wealth and privilege? I know lower income folks who feel like they need to cling on to lots of stuff they might need sometime. Thoughts on this? Either of you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think on the best way to phrase this, because this is something I hear a lot, and it's a conversation that I think is really important. This ability, you know, to just let everything go is definitely a sign of privilege. And there are a lot of people in communities that historically have had to hold on to items because they didn't have access to it in the future. I would recommend, if this is something that an individual is struggling with holding on to things, is really analyze, is that true? You know, think about, you know, the bag of plastic bags, which isn't as prevalent now since a lot of places have banned plastic bags, but we all have the bag of bags because we don't want to toss the bag. And so because we don't want to be wasteful, or because we don't want to buy another Ziploc bag. So just really think, like, is this really going to make a difference in my budget to throw away a Ziploc bag and have to rebuy a box of it or something like that? And in some cases, depending on what the item is, that is possible. I work with a lot of people who have, you know, lots of children, and they don't want to get rid of any of their clothes because their next kids are going to be able to grow into that. And that is a budget thing that is necessary for them. But for small items or larger items, even, you know, like, ask yourself if it's true, if that's really going to make an impact on your finances. And then also think about, what is the cost of not letting it go? Because that's a cost that nobody thinks about. But how much time is it going to take for you to shuffle through the piles to find that one thing that you know that you saved? Or how much time is it going to take for you to, you know, remember that you even had it versus, I know I don't have it, I need to pick up a new one. And then just the mental weight of knowing that there's piles everywhere, you know, and neither of those is wrong. It's just, what is more valuable to you?
All right. And the idea of holding and being honest with yourself, I'm guessing, about whether you truly will need that thing again.
Right. And if I could add real quickly, I generally recommend against storing stuff because that can just become an excuse to not actually deal with something. But when you're talking about this area, that might be an option, is store it and then find out if over time you really do need whatever it is you're talking about, presumably more than, you know, bags and that kind of thing that's more disposable. But I once heard a rule called the 20/20 rule. If you can afford to replace it for $20 within 20 minutes, then you can probably afford to let it go.
We will go to Adrian calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Adrian, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you so much. I wanted to share a project that I have going that some of the speakers today and some of the listeners might want to share with others and participate in. It's a non-monetized auction that I call an emotional value auction. I've done four of them. The most recent one was at the Colby College Museum of Art. The first one was at the Yarmouth History Center. And what I do is I invite people to lease something they may have that has that sort of emotional connection that makes it hard to let go of. And they offer up the item, and I ask for a written statement about what it is and why they have it and why it might be hard. And then we display that. It's almost like a yard sale, but instead of having a price tag, it has these written statements. And then people come in and they look at the item and they peruse the statement. And then if they're interested in any of the items, and would like to have it or gift it to someone, they bid, but instead of bidding money, they write why they're interested in it. And then I give those written statements of interest to owners. And then the owners pick from those expressions of interest someone to gift it to. So it's been a great way to connect people. Total strangers have connected around really meaningful personal objects, and it has really lightened the load of people, and it allows me the privilege of witnessing other people release, which helps me release things, which is something. And if anybody's interested in, I'll probably be doing another one. It's emotionalvalueauction@gmail.com, and I can share some examples of things people have exchanged and released, and some of the stories, which are, I think, some of the most interesting part of the project.
What a really interesting idea, Adrian. I'd love for you. Why don't you share one of the stories of something somebody has released and the person who's taken it?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm looking out my window right now, and one of my neighbors heard about the project. Actually, I was telling my neighbor about what I was doing up at the Colby Museum this summer, and then next thing I know, I got a text from her wife. A set of 100-year-old china from Dear Aunt Peg, and I just don't use it. I don't have space to display it. I feel connected to it, but it's just in storage, and maybe somebody else could use it. And so that was one of the items that was on display this summer in the lobby of the Colby Museum, and many people want it. It was one of the very popular, most popular items, you know, a set of free, beautiful china made in Italy. And from the many bids that she got, she selected to hand it off to a young single mother who wrote a very moving story about having to leave a situation that was unsafe and having to, you know, basically leave with no possessions with her daughter and then rebuilding her life. And she happened to have these two kind of corner cabinets in her room where they were perfect to display. And so I had the chance, you know, very safe COVID exchange. She invited me into her home and we were both masked and I delivered the china. And then she sent me photos of them in the new home. And that was something I was able to share with my neighbor. And, you know, there are many, many, many stories and I could go on. It's been really extraordinary, but that was, you know, just one example that's coming to mind right now.
Well, Adrian, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, that is an amazing thing. And I've witnessed this all the time that by telling the story of the item, it makes it a little bit easier to release. And also if the item is going to someone that they know will appreciate it. And so if you have items that you have, you know, strong emotional attachments to, you know, telling its story to someone can be really helpful in that process of letting it go. And then if there's, you know, a group or an individual that you know could really benefit from the item, you know, giving it to them versus just giving it, you know, to Goodwill or a free pile can make the process a lot easier to let things go. So Adrian, that's a beautiful project. I definitely would love to hear more about that. So I'll contact you, and I hope that other people take advantage of that. I love hearing about that.
Yeah, Adrian, thank you so much. And I jotted that down, emotionalvalueauction@gmail.com. Thanks so much for calling in. We are going to take another quick break. We are talking about decluttering, organizing. And when we come back, Sean, we're going to ask you about digital decluttering. You're listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Rooster Brother, roasting coffee since 1987 in downtown Ellsworth. Learn more at roosterbrother.com.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Elvis Costello has a new album. At 67, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame musician is looking back on childhood.
I'm thinking about who we have become and how we become, maybe. And part of that, I suppose, has something to do with there being less road up ahead than behind.
Elvis Costello, next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now, coming up shortly after Maine Calling from 12 noon until 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the 35th Annual Camden Conference, being held virtually February 25th through the 27th. This year's topic is Europe, challenged at home and abroad, with a full lineup of distinguished speakers, moderated by Marketplace Morning Report's David Brancaccio. To learn more about this year's Camden Conference and to register as a virtual attendee, please visit camdenconference.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we are talking about why decluttering your life can make you less stressed and how to do it. Joining me, Melissa Kaiser, who is an organizing expert, and Sean Fowles with the blog Living Large with Less. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. So, Sean, I understand that you've thought a great deal about digital decluttering. For me, digital decluttering means going through my email inbox and deleting old messages. I suspect it really is more than that. What do we mean by digital decluttering, and how do we do it?
Yeah, well, actually, it's interesting you should mention emails, because that's one way that, kind of like with the books, that was my first big hurdle. And once I got rid of the books, everything else sort of seemed to fall into place. And as with you, emails was my first big hurdle. I actually had a collection of over 20,000 that I had kept over the course of 20 years of being online. And over the course of time, it didn't happen overnight, trust me, but I did eventually get to that pinnacle of inbox zero. So I now have a grand total of about 20 emails on my computer. And it's an incredible feeling. I started literally by going from top to bottom on my computer. I touched, just like I did with my physical possessions when we started our journey, I touched every file, every folder, every photo. I have 13,000 photos on my iPhone. And it took some time, but it was just a matter of going through, as we discussed earlier, and you know, touching every item that was involved and just deciding, is this something I need to keep? Have I been using it? Will I ever use it? And organizing it accordingly. And it's an incredible feeling. It's very helpful. It clears up your computer and makes it run much better. Of course, we all have multiple devices nowadays. So it's not just our computer, it's our phones, our tablets, and so forth. But you start where maybe your pain point is, like with me, it was the emails. And then I just sort of progressed from there and tried to deal with every aspect of my digital life, from mobile to desktop and everything in between.
I'm going to go to an email from Joanne. I have several large household items in my mother's home that are broken, outdated, or beyond fixing. A 30-year-old television, cathode tube, small portable washing machine, and a 20-year-old queen-size mattress that's no longer supportive. These are taking up space and preventing us from adding the needed aging-in-place items that will be useful to my mother. We are willing to pay the going rate for moving and haul away. I have tried many nonprofits, Goodwill, Salvation Army, etc. There are no resources for this type of service. Help. Melissa?
So with those types of things you had mentioned, you know, they're either outdated or they're damaged. Unfortunately, the landfill or recycling is our last option. So check with your local transfer station on exactly what they can take. There's usually a fee involved for disposing of things like mattresses or old TVs. Goodwill does take back most electronics for recycling. I don't know about certain type tube TVs and things like that. So you could check their website, but they'll take electronics back, but like the washing machine, the transfer stations should take for metal recycling. And then if you don't have the capability of hauling those yourself, you know, you can contact a local handyman or a hauler who can take those away for you. Or I don't know exactly, you know, who's in the area, but the types of companies like the dump guys or the 1-800-JUNK type people can help you haul those types of things away as well.
An email from Lori. Perfect topic for me. I retired from the VA last year, bringing with me a lifetime of papers and photos into my deceased parents' summer house in Maine, which already has boxes and boxes of their papers and photos. I am going through legal paperwork now. Wills, divorce and marriage certificates, pension disbursement paperwork for my deceased husband's ex-wife. How much of this stuff do I need to keep, i.e. legal documents related to deceased members of my family?
I know for tax stuff, you know, 7 years is kind of the general rule of thumb. I would say that if they are for deceased people, they don't need to be kept, but I am not positive on that. I have not worked with anyone directly with deceased paperwork, you know, paperwork of deceased people. I bet a quick Google search would probably tell you legally what you're supposed to have. I would, you know, you can consider, why would I need this?
Right.
I don't know. Okay. Sean, do you have any info on that?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know the legal ramifications. You definitely want to research that, but I bet it's less than you think. And I think at this point, just based on that brief description, a shredder might be your best friend.
I'm going to go to Ian calling from Portland. Hi, Ian. Go ahead.
Hi. I know some people have mentioned different organizations because I don't always like the idea of going to just dropping off at somewhere like Goodwill or Salvation Army, which I've done. So if anybody had any suggestions of places to get rid of stuff if they don't know where to start. But I do know I'm one of the admins on a Buy Nothing group, which is on Facebook right now, but it's a national organization and they're building a website. But for me, it's been helpful knowing who it's going to, and they're hyper local, so it's just people in my community, and I've been able to, you know, meet people and just get rid of stuff and see who it's going to instead of just dropping it off somewhere. So that's been helpful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can always check too to see if there's any, you know, small shelters in your area or small groups. You know, Goodwill and Salvation Army, those big ones, those are often just the easiest. And so that's kind of why they're always a blanket recommendation on how to let go of your things. But definitely, you know, it just takes a little bit more research. You know, I know down in Portland, you have the Preble Street Shelter. You can always check with them to see if there's particular items that they need. Or, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more options down there. But you were absolutely correct. You know, I had mentioned earlier, you know, knowing who's taking your things can make it a lot easier to pass those things on, or knowing, you know, the story of how they're going to help someone. Yeah.
We'll go to Ted. Let's see, Ted, who's calling from Boston. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, go good. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. I've inherited more things than anyone could ever imagine. I have a couple recommendations. One is, if you have clothing or certain personal possessions, you might consider some kind of a theater or a performance company. I've given some old clothes and actually some luggage from like kind of the Get Smart era to a local theater company, and they were thrilled. Another option is, and includes appliances, believe it or not, is a state or local historical society. If an item can be documented and has a known kind of history in a certain area, very often historical, cultural history organizations are interested in things, and they consider history to be anything that happened yesterday or, you know, beyond. So they're very interested in 20th century things as well.
Thanks for the tip very much, Ted. Let's see. We'll move to Ashley calling from Booth Bay Harbor. Hi, Ashley. Go ahead.
Hi, I have just a quick question about any good ideas for organizing. I've amassed a collection of, I have a 6 and a 9-year-old, so school drawings, things that the kids bring home. I've got a couple of plastic totes that I have hanging file folders in, but I still seem to collect a lot from school. So any good tips for that? Thank you.
Oh boy, Ashley, if they're 6 and 9, you've got a long way to go too.
Melissa,
I'm going to turn to you.
So the first thing I would recommend saying is, you know, being honest with yourself, like, is this really that special? Because if we save everything, then nothing is special. And just because you're mom doesn't mean you also have to be an archivist. You don't have to keep every single paper that comes into your house. That said, if it's something that, you know, you look at and you're really excited about it, it really means a lot to you, or you genuinely think that your child would want to see, you know, their art progression over time, it sounds like you're on a great start with those totes. I usually recommend people have some kind of container with whatever size or style that works for you, you know, for each year. And then having that be part of, you know, kind of a routine. And so throughout the year, you can throw those things in that bin. And then maybe at the beginning of the next school year or around the winter holidays, whatever is a logical date for you, you know, go through the previous year. And then which of these do we want to keep? Which of these are we still excited about? Which ones still make sense for us? And then those could go in like an album or another bin or file box, something like that. But just, you know, permission to, you don't have to keep everything. It doesn't make you a bad mom to let those things go.
Okay, we're going to go to Bill calling from Raymond. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. Just briefly, I want to mention, you know, but personally, even though I own a house, pretty much everything that I keep in the house for tchotchkes or whatever, and as well as clothing, I can fit it into my car. So if I ever sold my place, I'd sell everything, the furniture as well. One thing I want to mention is people were asking about places where they could possibly donate. One organization, which is really, really good, it's called FreeCycle, and where they can actually post items that they have that they want to give away to other people. I think it's a pretty cool organization. And the last thing was someone had mentioned about the school children. I have a friend that kept a scrapbook, and they put a couple, three items every single year as that child was growing up into that scrapbook. So that was kind of like their keepsake thing for to remember the children by.
Bill, thanks a lot for great tips. I really appreciate it. We'll move on to Nancy calling from Roque Bluffs. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Okay. I tuned in late, so I don't know if you've covered this, but I'm talking about intellectual property. I'm an artist, poet, and a writer, and I have all this, and I don't know what to do. I don't want it to wind up in a dumpster when it's very valuable. At least I think so. Some is published, et cetera. What do I do?
So you're talking about artwork.
Pardon?
You're talking about artwork.
I have artwork. I'm an artist. I'm a poet. And also a writer. And right now I'm I keep producing, and it's time to be thinking about where does this go, and I don't know.
Interesting question. Sean, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, there's actually an intellectual property attorney that I know of in the Camden area, I can maybe supply that information. I don't know exactly how the best to do that. I could put it in the show notes afterwards or whatever. But I am aware of a intellectual property attorney in Midcoast, Maine. The other thing, the natural question that I thought of is, do you not have loved ones that have expressed an interest in it or would be willing to take that off of your hands? If so, that would be the natural place to consider. And then secondarily, there might be local organizations, depending on the nature of your artwork and so forth, if they might be interested in archiving some of your materials, again, not knowing the nature of your artwork and what it might represent. But those are a couple of things that first came to mind.
I have no family, or at least only bad families, and have stolen some of my paintings. So it has to be protected from my family.
Oh, wow.
Nancy, I've jotted down your phone number, and I'll provide that to you, Sean, after the program. Okay. So we'll see if we can get you in touch with the attorney. Let's see. We'll try to sneak in one more call. We'll go to Owen calling from Portland. Hi, Owen. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I don't mean this to be at all judgmental. I'm just wondering if the guests can comment on how it might be more difficult to pare down your belongings to just those that you really value if you have a very large space to fill. So I'm just wondering if they can consider that people with very large homes might actually have more difficulty being happy, not to mention the ability to reduce energy costs and environmental impact by downsizing a home. Thank you.
Well, Sean, this sounds like a question right up your alley. We have just a few seconds left.
Yeah, I would consider downsizing my space, first of all, because really that would kind of kill two birds with one stone. Then you don't have as much space to fill up. But storage could be, kind of a mixed blessing in that sense, because then you do feel the obligation to fill up that space. So I would consider downsizing.
Or just remember that just because you have space doesn't mean you have to fill it.
Right, exactly.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. Melissa Kaiser, who is a professional organizer and certified KonMari consultant, and Sean Fowles, founder and editor of Living Large with Less. He lives in a lighthouse keeper's cottage. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Our theme was composed by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. You can visit mainecalling.org for our audio archive and to subscribe to Maine Calling's weekly newsletter. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.